very good Tuesday. Race fan, Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening that way, and at the website stevebick.com as well. Day two of the recapping and the recapping and the rehashing and the reexamination and the replay just goes over and over. It's one of those races that is just, you watch it, and I guess really thinking back to Mind That Bird and Street Sense, I guess we did the same kind of thing. And even Orb. I mean, Orb rallied differently. But whenever, like Andy Beyer said yesterday, and Andy, I got a couple of very nice notes about Andy and how much everybody enjoyed. He was, I think he was kind of amused I think he got a kick out of the way this turned out. And actually, I read on that topic, I read a piece at the Globe and Mail. The Globe and Mail. I want to say Cathal Kelly, I think, the sports, one of their sports columnists. It's a little tough to get to because they've got the firewall and so forth, but the first time you click on it, I actually tried to go back to it a second time and got shut out, but the first time you click on it, you can read the piece. And he said something, I think, that is now 72 hours out, it has resonated, which is, this is really one of those things that for sports fans that just doesn't happen really anymore, or certainly very often, that you get a completely unexpected result. And of course, we get it if you're a regular horse player and you're involved in the game, you know, in any capacity seriously. You know that it happens on a regular basis. I mean, there's as my abbreviation on my PPs, when I write LSB, longest shot on the board, when I put that as an abbreviation, we know it happens. It happens more like Jason. As you just listened, if you were listening to the replay, it happens more as it did in the Jason Cook three technique variety. You know, 30-1 in a 10-horse, 12-horse field, whatever it might be. You know, or even, it doesn't even have to be that big. It can be an 18-1 shot in a 7-horse field. This happens, but at this stage, with quote unquote everybody watching. I mean, wasn't this akin to the St. Peter's run in the NCAAs? But they would have had to have actually won the championship for it to be as complete in terms of bewilderment. So this Cathal Kelly's piece was nice on that front, and it's one of the reasons that it's capturing as much appreciation, I think, and it's one of the game's great marketing tools, honestly, is that at least for for 14 days or 13 days and a few hours, it captivates and it holds people's attention, and they feel anybody of any size, as we said yesterday, anybody of any size involved in the game. I mean, And of course, not everybody can put together even the 30 or 40,000 it took to claim Rich Strike or to claim Three Technique. But you can certainly conceive of it. And if you, if you have a handful of friends, I mean, we put, we put 20,000, 25,000 together originally when we bought Someone Loves You. We bought her for 23,000. We claimed, you know, we've claimed any number of horses from 20 to, I guess the most we've claimed one for is, actually I think is probably maybe 30. About, yeah, 25? I'd have to go back and look. Claimed about 8 or 9 horses over the years. And this is inspiring. Now, of course, the interest that it generates, the unusual thing about a story like this is that you have a horse that comes from so far off the pace, and you know, even a horse of Orb's quality, you know, went to Baltimore and got beat. For any of the closers, and obviously, you know, they had various degrees of, you know, of success and of, you know, stakes experience and accomplishment. But Mo Donegal and Zandon, you know, being the two lead characters in that conversation, it's not a likely scenario. And so what happens is that you get to Baltimore, and the people that have been immediately interested and you know, taken a shine to this story and to this horse, and to Sonny Leone. Sonny, by the way, I reached out for Sonny, talked to Jeff Perrin this morning, and Sonny and his wife and baby, if you didn't see their picture, they've taken a few days to themselves in Florida, and then Sonny will be back riding this weekend. He's got, I think, Belterra, is on Friday. But, you know, there's so many parts of this that are appealing. The issue is that what it would take for him to win it at Pimlico is tricky. I mean, you don't get the field, and you don't get, you know, you don't get that size. In fact, we should go over the field when we get a chance. Steve Asmussen is going to join us in about 10 minutes to start things off. We're 24 hours behind with Mig and Andy Serling later, and we'll see about a couple of others. But the problem always is that when you get this, you think about Mind That Bird, and there's going to be potentially even more parallels if Secret Oath were to turn around and contest Preakness. I don't feel like she's, you know, she's not the win candidate that Rachel Alexandra, to me anyway, going at, you know, just sitting here right now looking potentially ahead. But you know, you realize, said this over the years, if, and of course Calvin Burrell makes the move from, you know, from Mind That Bird, you know, to stick with Rachel, but if that doesn't happen, if Rachel doesn't, if the sale doesn't happen, and in fact maybe you can even bring this up with Steve Asmussen, I hadn't thought about it until now, but if that doesn't happen, Mind That Bird wins the Preakness. Of course, you would have had to have, you know, we should really look at that chart again, because, you know, she was out there, you know, winging it. So who knows if the pace necessarily is as fast to give mine that bird a bit of the setup that allowed him to close the way he did at Pimlico. But the point being that people will latch on now, and then you worry or you anticipate their disappointment if Rich Strike doesn't come back and win the Preakness. Then they'll be like, there's that deflation at the same time. It's always amazing. And I mean, let's be honest, there's certainly more of a public interest, a widespread interest in this result, more because of the 80-1 I know that there seems to be, and this is, I guess this is true of everything. There's always going to be, it seems, a way for certain, for certain types to, to find a negative. That isn't something I'm certainly not, I'm not inclined that way. A few, there's plenty of, and there's still plenty of other stories that are emerging that include, some of the mutual returns, and the speculation, turns out it was speculation. Frank McGoey did not hit that pick five yesterday. There had been speculation in a circle that of friends and associates. Now, even though Frank didn't hit it for the 100,000, he did quite well. he sent me a funny text. He said that he got a bunch of congratulations off of my reporting, and but he said he was good for about half that figure. So Frank had a big day. He's busy today because I did want to talk to him. I will say, I don't know if I'm authorized to say this necessarily. A member of the Fairgrounds handicapping, horse playing, and social gathering elite, such as they are, somebody walked away with seven figures on the afternoon. So it, and I also got emails, got a lot of nice and interesting, and we haven't talked about the miscue and the the ADW platform frustrations, but we'll get to that as well. The opportunities on Saturday, and that particularly that point about the employing of the all button, and I even hearing these stories and knowing that people, hit, let's say, for who knows, that 20-cent jackpot, for instance, what did that pay? $161,630. The pick five is mentioned. And, they print out that auxiliary chart that with virtually like an agate approach, and it's so hard for my eyes have gotten so awful even surgically corrected. Here's the pick five that ended. Now this one ended up with 200. This is 247,000. So that other pick five had to be the all dirt pick five. This is unbelievable. I'm trying to read this. Reads like stereo instructions for you Beetlejuice fans. The $3 Oaks. Here, let's just go through this. It'll be easier this way. The $3 three-year-old pick three paid $29,166. And that, of course, was with Jack Christopher and Stolen Base. And Stolen Base had to knock some people out. I mean, you could single, a lot of people were ready to single Jack Christopher, me included. Stolen Base was part of my, you know, was part of my ticket. Now, see, there you think about it. I mean, one by, you know, Jack Christopher single with, I mean, I think I went three or maybe four deep in the American turf. And then 20, that's an $80 ticket. Times three, $240. Right? This is very, very difficult. And then knowing that if Sonny Leone doesn't pull the rabbit out of the hat, knowing that, you know, Epicenter at 4-1, I mean, what does that do to all these numbers? The 50 cent pick three, the Oaks Forster Derby pick three, 110-21, paid $7,800. Pool was $650. The straight regular pick three paid $16,012. And that would have been the one with probably what, Jackie's Warrior? Yeah, right? Jackie's Warrior. Oh, plenty of people would have singled. Santin. He was on all the tickets. I went four deep, personally. And then Rich Strike. So the straight pick three paid $16,012. Here's another. This is Oaks. Oh, that's got to be a Conso. The pick four paid $25,000. That ended the stakes pick four. The Derby pick four paid $25,834. The Derby pick five paid $247,215. The Dirt pick five paid $187,000. And that's interesting. Let's see, 187. And what was the pool in that dirt? The dirt pick five had a pool of 660,000. And you had to have, the amazing thing about that is, you not only had to come up with Rich Strike, but you had to come up with Three Technique. It would be two longest shots on the board, start and finish the all dirt pick five. Right? Amazing. And again, Jackie's Warrior helps. You know, helps keep the budget under control. Round this out with the $2 pick six. That was the grade one $2 pick six, paid $5,024. Now that's five correct. So five of six, and it was a must pay. And then the 20 cent, as mentioned, $161,000. Daily Double paid, the late double with the Derby paid $1,364 with Santin. And the Oaks Derby double, what'd that pay? $973. Now, I will remember, I can't, it's funny. There's a story that I'm reminded of on this front. involving Gus's double. And here is another all single example. Gus went with Barbaro. He loved Barbaro. He went all single to Barbaro. So 14 by 1 as opposed to 1 by 20. And he caught Lemons Forever the day before Barbaro, right? And I forget what that paid. I'll look that up. But, you know, you have to love Secret Oath to go 1 by 20 to hit the double. So it's just a fascinating, the whole thing is just amazing to try to, you know, post-mortem the approaches. The in-race, the Exacta paid $4,100 with the favorite. So if you back-wheeled the favorite, now that's something I have done. I have certainly back-wheeled that way over the years. Not in recent memory, but over the years I have done that. $4,100 exact. Our man, Joe the Duke, Joe had his biggest, I think he might have had the Exacta. I think Joe boxed a handful of horses and ended up with the Exacta, or may have actually wheeled the Epicenter, but I know Joe was really excited, and he had his best Derby ever, so congratulations to Joe the Dude. He hit that $4,100 Exacta. The Super paid $321,500. Unbelievable. And I also got a note, I got a nice note that was a little frustrated on that topic, saying, you know, wouldn't this have been a great place for the 10-cent Super? I don't know. What was the Super? The Super pool was $14,854,000. I'm working on a visit. The Superfecta. So a 10 cent. I mean, you can't assume the 10-cent Super. You know, the equivalent is $32,000, but the 10-cent Super would certainly have, you know, siphoned some of that value out. Super High Five paid $741,000. And the Super High Five pool was $950,000, actually. Interesting. I haven't heard much about this. So that's got to be $95,180. So that's got to be a single ticket. That's a single ticket, right? I haven't seen anybody write about that. I'll look into that. And then the 50-cent try paid $74.35. So there's the mutual. I'm glad we had a minute to do this, and well, and bear with me for 1 second as we try to figure out a potential visit here. I may swap out. We may have a. We may have to make a move here, so stay with us and let me. Casey, I'll tell you in about 2 seconds, as soon as I get a confirmation of this. Okay. All right. So, that beautiful. I've got. sorry about this, folks. Rick Dawson's going to join us in about a half hour, a little less than a half hour. All right, in about 25 minutes, which means we got perfect situation to get. Go ahead and Casey, go ahead and get Steve Asmussen on. All right, and then we'll come back with Rich Strike owner Rick Dawson. There we go. for Steve Asmussen, who's going to join us here, this I mentioned yesterday. As I came off the racetrack and went toward the tunnel, he was talking to Dave Grenig, and I could just tell he just felt like his horse did everything that he could possibly have wanted. And that just fell short. I mean, how can you, how much more can you ask? But on the overall front, it was a tremendous weekend for the Asmussen Barn, including the 2 Grade 1 wins. And Steve Asmussen joins us now. Steve, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Obviously very proud of the whole barn and the team.
I'm sure, and I saw that. I saw that as you were, talking to Dave Grenig after the Derby, that you knew that Joel and Epicenter did everything they could, and absolutely ran. He ran a very complete race, a race that's going to win a majority of the Derbies that he would have run in.
Yeah, I feel that way exactly. Obviously, wanting to win the Kentucky Derby, but just I think my goal, looking back a few days removed, is to feel exactly like I did this year walking in the gate, like you had the best horse and he was ready, and very unbelievable, great story with Rich Reich and Eric Reed and his team winning it, and just. A huge congratulations to them.
Now, that's a uniform feeling for you, and I suppose we could fold Echo Zulu in too if we want to talk about Ron Winchell and the operation, and to come to the Derby Oaks with those two horses, and they both ran as well as could be expected and as well as they could. It's one of those situations where, everybody is trying to bring their horse up to this perfectly, and the cards played, the cards spill out the way they do.
Oh, absolutely. We've been obviously extremely fortunate for a long time and plan on continuing to be, but as you see, it wasn't in the cards for us this weekend in the Oaks or the Derby, but we would not want to trade horses with anybody going forward.
How did everybody come out, both Echo Zulu and Epicenter?
I think that's what allows us the positive attitude is the fact that we have a lot of horse left and big plans,
Exactly. Let's talk about Epicenter and the performance, Steve, that I think about, and it involves Lucas. It goes back to Oxbow and the race that he ran in the Derby, and then he turned around and wins the Preakness. He ran the same kind of race, basically, which was attending a real pace, and he was the only horse that was around at the finish. As anybody that can see the chart, it feels like he would be really primed for Preakness. What's your feeling?
Well, we spoke with Ron and Winchell and David Fisk, and we I think that the responsible thing to do is to wait until he goes back to the track in the morning to have the conversation and make our decision. But I'm extremely pleased with everything I see, from Epicenter's attitude to how sound he is, his appetite, his energy. But he'll go back underweight tomorrow and go to the racetrack and measure where we're at on tomorrow morning.
Excellent. All right, so there's a real chance that we could see him in Baltimore.
Like I said, I will take him to the racetrack tomorrow and discuss if it's a necessary party.
All right, I'm not gonna do any arm twisting. I know better. we'll revisit this in Baltimore, I guess, and down the road. Talk about the race, Steve, as you were watching, and what your thoughts were about how, you know, if you were too close. Any thoughts about that as you watched them go around?
No. I was concerned with how far back he was until they announced the first fraction. He was off the bridle when they went under the wire the first time. That was a lot of dirt for him to take. But when they lined out down the backside, he looked remote control. You know, Joel, smooth as it gets. Where he was at the head of the stretch is exactly where we wanted to be, and it. Everything went well, but those three quarters of a length at the finish. A wonderful, what a wonderful opportunity and what a great thrill. And I think the only thing that can be said is congratulations to the winners, you know.
There you go. All right.
And that's the beautiful part about horse racing.
Well, you sent out so many excellent runners and performers in Derby, and no doubt there's a Derby out there that'll the roulette ball will fall in the Asmussen slot at some point. One thing to ask Steve on this front, actually. You changed up a little bit the way in which you came into the race. That five furlong work, as the last work for Epicenter. I thought that was really notable that you did something a little different than we usually see from you going into the race. How much of that was just based on where you thought he was and what he needed, and just some reflection on that approach?
I'd made that decision watching him work the Sunday before three quarters cooling out. There's a lot here, and that light half mile, I'd have had to call the carpenters and raise the roof in the barn to get him back in it if I would have done that. And he just physically and mentally necessary to do a little more and capable to do it.
Interesting. I'm glad I asked that then, because
and the decision on what company had everything to do with the tempo of what I wanted the week of and the intensity of it. And my goal is to feel exactly like I did when they were walking in the gates, that we're ready for this and we're good enough. And that was such an exciting feeling to me this year, and I want to recreate that for myself.
Well, we'll look forward to it, and we'll watch as the 2-year-olds begin to come out of the barn and out of the woodwork. In the meantime, there's a lot of other things to be excited about. Let's stay with Saturday for a minute and talk about the two the big performance from Jackie's Warrior, and you had expressed, a little bit of a concern about the 3 weeks, but it feels like that plan worked to a T.
Yeah, I'm a great trainer with a horse that's that good. to be a Hutch Jordan to win $500,000 race and be rewarded for it, how often does that happen? I mean,
what a phenomenal horse Jackie's Warrior is. I mean, and you look back over his, you know, grade one winner at 2, 3, and 4 now, and I mean, the recency may be it, but have you ever seen a grade one won any easier than that?
No, honestly, not at all.
Hey, I thought Joel said it. We were standing in the paddock, and he was standing there like he does, just looking over the crowd, you know, just like he was looking at the top of a hill, looking out over a pasture. And I mean, and Joel said, they don't come along like him very often, do they? I go, if ever. I mean, it was before he walked out. He just, what a tremendous animal he is. What a tremendous physical and mental, you know. Wow, he's fast.
And he went, you know, it's always, whenever you see a race like that, they're coming off the turn, Joel is motionless, and everybody else is scrubbing, and it just tells you, I mean, everybody's asking their horse not to get even, just to keep pace. I mean,
they're losing their position on it. I mean, not keeping pace. I believe I said it last year. I don't know if there's a funner horse to watch run than Jackie's Warrior. It's just, they're crying and eating.
Exactly. And, you know, there is one thing that jumped out at me that I circled after the race when I went back and I put the chart with the PPs. He's now 3 for 3 at Churchill, Steve, and you know, not that the juvenile counts for anything when he went a mile and a 16th, but I'm sure it'd be nice to have the Breeders' Cup at Churchill this fall. Not that he couldn't be successful at Keeneland instead, but boy, he gets over this track like a dream.
Yes, he does. Yeah, you know, and I think that, you know, coming back, that was why the Churchill Downs was the first target for him, and now the focus is, you know, the Breeders' Cup. Just enjoying him. Enough cannot be said for Kirk and Judy Robeson to allow us to run a champion another year. It's just, you know, the races are very lucrative, but no way it could match the stud fee that he would command. And for them to basically set money aside for us to enjoy this horse another year is very special, very sportsman of them.
Well, and it also shows their trust in you. I mean, it is part of that equation.
And I appreciate it.
Has there, out of curiosity, since you mentioned that, before we talk about the filly, is there a stud deal in place for him that hasn't been discussed publicly?
I better not speak on it if it hasn't been publicly discussed, right? It is widely known that he is going to Spendthrift.
Okay, there we go. All right.
It is widely known that he is going to Spendthrift. Okay. That's not breaking news, and they are
cool.
More than excited to have him. So
there we go. All right. Let's turn our attention. We'll stick with the wins for now. Let's talk about what I described, I think, on Friday in talking about Pauline's Pearl in the La Troyenne. This felt like an It's a Julie situation, that this was going to be, you know, the spot to win this grade one.
But a beautiful, I mean, just an absolutely beautiful moment with a beautiful mare. And, I mean, how special it is for her to have gotten better with all the racing and travel that she did. I mean, not gotten weaker or less, but actually improved. I mean, with a, you know, steady and vigorous race schedule as a 3-year-old. And for her to be faster now than she's ever been. And, you know, it was a great win. Another Stone Street homebred with, you know, her catalog page being, you know, the daughter of a spinaway winner and a Derby winner in the second dam, and just you know, racing royalty as far as a pedigree goes, and then for her to be such a strong and consistent race mare, but win the La Trion on, you know, obviously a very special day. And then I don't think enough can be said about the ride Joel put up on her. Because, I mean, the subtle, everybody was aware, there's, you know, Ava's Grace is the only thing that can possibly pressure. She dares the devil in there. And Joel's recognition that Cohen was, you know, going to lay off of She Dares the Devil and planned on it immediately. And for when she was five wide at the first corner, you know, to get in position down the backside, you know, what a, you know, split second brilliant move that made a difference with Pauline Spurl. To give away a little bit at that point just to, you know, to be in position to win. But very strong performance from Pauline Spurl.
Big time. And now two-time graded stake winner at four. She won the Houston Ladies Classic, which, believe me, they appreciate over at St. Houston.
What a key race that has become with Midnight Basu, Latruska, and now Pauline Spurl, all being previous winners of the Sam Houston Ladies Classic. Becoming such a key race as far as fillies and mares in the championship division.
Well, and I guarantee that Frank Hopf is expecting a call from the American Graded Stake Committee at the end of the year that'll see the use. You would think that the moving average, that this, because they kind of thought that she, that it might be a grade two for this year, you got to think that this tips the scales for Sam Houston.
Only if they're using the formula they say they do.
You don't miss a trick. What do you foresee, Steve, for her? I mean, how quickly will she, you know, target something else?
Well, I mean, what a luxury to have her and Clairiere to keep separate for Stone Street. I mean, to have one is remarkable. To have two of them is embarrassment of riches that we are glad to enjoy. But it gives us tremendous options with both fillies.
So you know, kind of alternate, you know, looking at the calendar, things like the FIPS and so forth. But
top class older mare races, you know, just with the goal of the only time they run against each other being the Breeders' Cup Distaff.
There you go. I've got to ask you, because I know you've got to be happy. There were plenty of people on a handicapping front that thought Wicked Halo had a bit of a look in the eight bells. You have to be happy with her try.
Oh, absolutely. That was, yeah, right. Anybody, you know, astute handicappers as far as trips go, was the position she was in, a lot of dead weight between her and where we wanted to be in. You know, she responded nicely and was one of the few horses on Friday that was continuing to run at the wire, you know, late after being, you know, fairly wide and advantaged to. And you notice the final time of that race compared to the other ones. Obviously, good numbers coming out of that. But that was a top-class performance, again, from Wicked Halo and one we've been waiting on.
Nice. What's a typical...
No doubt I was disappointed with her first two runs this year, you know, and for that was a big step forward. We will make sure she's doing similar as she was going into this, look for the same signs, but it puts her back into a serious conversation for some nice three-year-old filly races.
Well, and especially when we think back to Saratoga last summer, you would think that... you know, the test as the summer goal is a natural.
She has a stable mate that might have a little something to do with that also.
Well, yeah, all right. That's the problem.
And it'll be very easy to explain because of the ownership group. So
there you go.
That won't be a hard conversation.
Well, then let's talk a little bit about Echo Zulu and where you think you are coming out of this Oaks Drive.
Right. Everybody witnessed the same thing, fractions, but just how valiant she fought on, but most definitely look forward to backing her up in distance. Next goal is the Acorn with her June 11th. On a surface and at a distance and a trip, she has already excelled at. So very love how she came out of the Oaks, went back to the track this morning, and very excited about having her to run in the Acorn next.
Well, so there's your big turn back, the first of the turnbacks among the 3-year-olds.
Right.
Heading in that direction. Well, for all the big opportunities, Steve, outstanding set of results, obviously. She was beaten 3 lengths for all the money, and less than a length for second and third. And then, of course, the Derby placement, the 2 grade 1 wins. And then even a horse like Society, Peter Blum's Gunrunner filly, I thought ran a hell of a race in the race after the Oaks.
Yeah, isn't that amazing how many Gunrunners, the percentage of them are top class? It's hard to even comprehend. Like, there's another one. I mean, that is a stakes caliber horse. I mean, do the right thing, map it out, versatile. The pace they show, the competitiveness, they are oak like their daddy, and it's just their embarrassment of riches.
Well, a tremendous, tremendous weekend, and because everyone looks forward to these visits from you, particularly the horse players, let's look through the list, whether it's Churchill or Louisiana Downs or Lone Star. My
focus wasn't on where we can cash a ticket on this. I'm still a little bit of a hangover from the Oaks Derby of the fog of the Whirlwind Week, but we are live this week too. Oh my goodness, we have some that we think that we'll win. Thursday at Churchill won't disappoint anybody. With two runners that'll not disappoint any of the players.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up one question, actually, because Alejandro is running on Thursday, of course, and is in the 7th in that allowance, and you're also running that 2-year-old back, Undelay. Regarding Rachel and the and her Preakness, Steve, and those interesting circumstances, and of course, observing what happened on Friday, and knowing the decision you've got to make, what do you think back to in terms of spinning Rachel back in the 2 weeks to the Preakness win?
I mean, it was, she's the best horse. Let's go prove it. Sometimes it's simple as who's the fastest, and that was the thinking with Rachel. She's faster than they are. Let's go beat them.
And obviously Jess Jackson had the purchase and
Jess, the ultimate sportsman. I mean, just put your money up and prove it. And believe in it and execute it and finish it off. That was the plan, and she was the tool. It's just unbelievable. Just truly, Pegasus is who she was. Rose above the ground and move.
Well, I mean, I was lucky enough to see so many of her performances, and that and the Woodward. I wasn't there for the Haskell, but I'm watching that from Saratoga.
Yep. My feelings from Rachel and stuff that were just overwhelming and caught you off guard. You're preparing and worrying about the crazy things that trainers worry about. Any variables or anything like that, wanting everything as safe and secure as it can be. But when we walked out of the stakes barn at Pimlico,
with Rachel Alexander for the Preakness. I have never felt that level of support for everybody wanting one horse to win. I mean, when you're in, get to compete in big races, there's camps and preferences. But when you ran Rachel, everybody, it felt like every single living creature wanted her to win. And it was such a positive vibe. And that's what struck me the most about running Rachel Alexander in the Preakness. We'd walked over for a lot of races, but I'd never walked over with that many people honestly wanting her to have success.
Well, it remains one of the most audacious campaigns in racing history, and that was really the first step to the next level. Just amazing,
Steve. to a level not ever achieved before or since.
Exactly.
You know, Billy beating older males than a grade one. After, you know.
Well,
Kentucky Oaks, the Preakness, to beating older males in a grade one at Saratoga. Yeah, good luck.
I tell people, keep doing the research. Keep trying to find in the history books the 3-year-old that beat older males in September. You good luck. Go find that.
That's right.
We're still waiting for an answer.
Yeah. Criticism column is very small on that one. That's all there is to it.
Steve Asmussen, congratulations to everybody involved. Just a great team effort and just an outstanding Derby Oaks weekend. We'll look forward to you and Ron Winchell and DJ Fisk making the decision on Epicenter. It would certainly enhance the proceedings in Baltimore. So we'll wait to hear.
All right. Well, thank you. You guys have a good day.
Steve Asmussen, everybody, always particularly a treat when he's in as rollicking a mood as he obviously is. We're going to stay right here before we get to Rich Migliore. We'll stay on here for probably at least however long that Rick Lawson's in the mood to talk, because the owner of Rich Strike is going to join us, and I look forward to this. I always look forward to any of these conversations, but the scene that was right there, I was kind of standing mid track and listening to Nick Luck with Eric Reed and with Herbie Reed and then with Rick. So he's now had 2.5 days to let it sink in, and there isn't a lot of time really to relax. You it comes right at you. The turnaround from Derby to Preakness, I mean, it keeps you on your toes. I said to Tina, in fact, this morning, I said, I got to leave on Sunday, and probably going to drive through Connecticut. And see my dad on the way, but you spin right back, and I'm anxious. Boy, I now after listening to Steve, I am anxious to hear about Epicenter, and I bring up the Oxbow because there's a real parallel here between the deep closer Orb and a horse that attended the pace and just got overhauled in the in the late stages. So I mean, if Epicenter goes, it'll be very interesting actually to see what happens on the wagering front, right? Huh. Right? Because that would... There, you would think that he might... go favored. How about Casey? I think we got to take a break here. I think this is Rick calling me. All right, let's take the break. We'll come right back. Wait a minute. I think maybe we got Rick now. Do we?
We do. How are you guys this morning?
Forget me. I'm fine every day. How could I not be okay, Rick? I Rick Lawson joining us to talk about winning the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. A few days, as you could only imagine. So much fun, so much happiness, lots of tears, lots of hugging, lots of kissing, lots of fun.
We talked obviously yesterday to Eric, and to be honest, Rick, I feel pretty close to the story just because I was tracking the opportunity to get into the race with Eric. You know, with each passing week leading up to the end of the Derby point system races. And It looked like there was a point when you were going to get in, and then came the Lexington, and a couple of horses leapfrogged you with just, 2 and 4 points? So that had to be maddening. Talk about the entire tracking into Saturday, going back to even to the claim.
It was the last month. Starting there with running third in the Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway. We'd earned 1 point in the Bataga a few weeks before that, and we earned 20 points at the Jeff Ruby Stakes, and so it gives obviously 21 total. And then we have to wait out the Lexington. And so I'm looking at this list. I know these horses as probably as well as their owners and trainers because I watched every one of them. All top 30 or so for the last month. And so looking down the list, I noticed there were several horses that if they hit the board at the Lexington were going to leapfrog us and push us back. So, you know, we were 22 on the list, and then Sunday after the Lexington we're 24, and back to 24, 25. And then early voting went out and a few others, and so we're creeping up, getting closer. And then on the Friday before the Derby, the big story was Mr. Lucas's horse, Ethereal Road, was setting in the 20 spot. We're setting in 21. And the absolute last minute before the deadline at 9 a.m. Eastern time, he pulled his horse from the Derby, and we were in. I had literally started texting people, hey, we got close. We didn't move past 21. We're going to huddle up and figure out where we go from here. I'll let everybody know what our next race is. And as I'm sending, I just typed the text once, copy-pasted, and the 25 others, and I look up, and Eric's on the phone, and his eyes are half dollars, and he starts screaming, we're in, we're in, we're in, and the rest. My feet haven't hit the ground since, actually, and so getting in the Derby was just such a huge thing, and it was kind of our goal. But then once we were in, we started strategizing the race and looking at the race, and we really, honestly, I know people don't believe us, but we absolutely thought we had a shot. I mean, our horse gets better and better the further he ran. He went mile and 16th. He got better at a mile and 8th, and we knew he was going to get better at a mile and a quarter. How much better? We weren't sure. But we were certain he was going to be better. Good enough to win the Derby? We didn't know. But we just knew we were going to get a better race. And, wow, did he deliver. And Sonny Leon made the ride of a lifetime. I've never seen anything like it. It looked like a sports car going in and out of traffic. It was just amazing.
It's going to be, it'll be one of the, obviously, one of the performances from a rider standpoint that is going to be held up forever as one of the most brilliant rides in the race's history. But at the same time, there's no brilliant ride if this horse isn't ready to fire a shot like that. And, you know, even as it looked, Rick, like he wasn't getting in, you know, all the 2 weeks that I was in Louisville, you know, and I put up that video of him with the 59-2 workout, but I mean, you could tell that he was doing great, and he looked super out there on the track every morning. You just think to yourself, well, wherever he goes, you know, your mind with a horse like him leading up, you just say to yourself, I got to keep track and see where he ends up, and it was going to be the Peter Pan, but you know, you just, he's not top of mind. I said yesterday, I think he would have at least been recognized as a real exotic threat, as a deep closer in a race with speed. You could have certainly projected him as a horse that might be like a Barber Road, you know, a horse that had an outside shot as a win candidate, but was more likely to potentially catch a piece.
Sure, sure, yeah. In fact, I had friends and folks calling me, you know, what should I do, what should I do? And I never tell people how to bet, but I just said, listen, you know, he's going to be long, long odds. You know, my recommendation, you know, play a show bet on him and have fun with it, and he may surprise us. You know, he may surprise us and hit the board, and if he runs third, it'll probably play, you know, probably pay you 20-1. I don't know, but it's going to be... It'll be a nice payday. Back to your earlier question about the claim. It's interesting because Eric kind of takes credit for that. I kind of take credit. It's been so long, but I know we always discuss everything together. But we just analyzed the horse. We liked his workouts on dirt. We liked the breeding. I'm kind of a keen eye fan, and I think that type of horse, that traditional layback, close, go further type horse is coming back. We've been in this speed. Everything's got to be speed. Everything's got to be up on front, and we've been that way for now for several years, and it's fun to see, you know, the Strike the Gold type and a few others that came off the came off that turn in 10th, 11th, 12th, 15th place and win. So maybe we'll start going back to more of a traditional type racehorse that kind of sets in off the pace and then finishes hard and runs long.
It's funny that you mentioned that, and that you mentioned being a keen ice fan, because in the last couple of weeks, I don't know if you saw the piece that Sid Fernando did in TDN, but you know, he works with Jerry Crawford at Donegal, and Jerry Crawford's approach is specifically that. He's looking for a classic horse and a distance horse, and when he's, you know, when they're buying prospects, and in fact, as Sid, and we'll discuss this tomorrow with him, stamina and turf are, you know, very much equitable. They go hand in hand. And so from a breeding standpoint, this was a horse that figured to appreciate this kind of trip. I mean, but the way he finished, Rick, to come home in that 24 and change, you know, in racehorse, you know, Derby time, 202 and 3. I mean, that's a sort of a etched in stone kind of a Derby finishing time.
Yeah, when we were in the paddock and I was visiting with Eric and Sonny, the jocks had came out, so we were just a couple of minutes from riders up, and Sonny and I were talking, and I said, hey, I kind of put my hands in the air, and I said, this is why you do what you do right here. And I said, you know, go out there and make it your day. And I said, another thing, you can go out and derail Calvin Burrell on the rail and make it Sonny's rail. And he started laughing. He's such a good kid and a great guy, good family man. I mean, he's just the kind of person you want to be in business with. But he looked at me and he's like, you know, yes, sir. And I said, you know, I said, I think, Sonny, I said, if you can bring him home in 202, 202 and a half, I think we'll win the Derby. And I think the official time was 202.61.
Yep.
And so afterwards, we were kind of hugging and kissing and all that. And I told him, I said, did you see the finish time? And he said, no, I haven't. I said, it's 2:02.61. And he went, oh, my gosh, that's what we planned. And I said, yeah, that's crazy. There's been so many of those things that have happened to us in the last couple of weeks where, you know, a conversation we had on Wednesday suddenly became the whole circle came to true on Saturday evening. And I mentioned to Eric a week or so back, I said, you know, I think if we don't get in early and we have to get in by scratch later in the week, I said, you know, I could see somebody scratching out of the 20 spot. We get in on the outside. And honestly, I wasn't disappointed in that because of our horse. I would much rather have been where we were. Of course, we took a big chance. I mean, not a big chance, but we were really wishing and hoping all week, waiting to get in. But prior to that, had we made the post position draw on Monday, we could have drawn the one hole, the two hole. And, you know, and that could be, you know, as you know, it's extremely tough. So the fact that we weren't invited to the post draw because we were number 21 and then later Mr. Lucas crashed and we were able to move in, we came in on the outside. That didn't bother us at all. We thought, you know, no. Hey, we're going to run down the track and Sonny's going to bring him to the rail anyway, so it doesn't really matter where we start. I just didn't like being in one or two, so it worked out perfect.
And you can see, for those that haven't watched the replay yet, you know, go back and watch the replay and watch the overhead, but you know, the red and white jacket is easy to follow, and of course being out in the 20 hole, and as always, whenever a horse is in the 20, they'll take the outside, you know, they'll go to the open spot, it takes the one outside step, and then Sonny corrals him and starts to move him behind the field, and he sets up shop, and he moves comfortably, and there just was nothing about the trip and the ride that wasn't perfect. Although, you know, Rick, you probably didn't see it until the overhead shot came out. But that period where he had to kind of wait for the seam to reopen, that was potentially a place where he could have been stopped cold.
That was the race. I mean, Sonny said that in his press conference after the race. He says that was the winning move. He says, I had to wait, and then he kind of squeezed through a pretty tight spot, and then he came up behind Messier. Messier was tiring. And Sonny, you know, his instructions from Eric were, you know, to get to the rail and stay on the rail, get back to the rail, whatever you have to do. And because we've always felt, and you guys have seen these races for years, as you start coming down that stretch and horses start tiring, they tend to float out a little bit. And typically they're four or five lanes wide at the finish of the race. So there's all kinds of room just inside. And when he comes up on Messier, and he could have gone to the rail, but it was going to be awfully tight. And he says, no, I've got, in his words, he said, I had a lot of horse, and I just moved him to the outside, circled around Messier, brought him right back to the inside, and made that clear. And I think Rich Strike saw that open track and saw those two horses. And as you guys noticed, when he went by Epicenter, he was eyeing him. Boy, he had his head cocked over, like, okay. I'm getting by you. I remember you. You beat me seven lengths back in at the fairgrounds. I'm getting by you. And so, what a great race. And that's another thing, too. Everybody thinks we caught a hot pace, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we did. But we also passed Epicenter and Zandon, you know, 40 yards from the finish line. And those are two fantastically bred horses that are, you know, fantastically trained. I mean, these are, you know, two of the greatest trainers in the world. So, you know, being able to catch them in those final strides and win the race, you know, it wasn't like we went by, you know, a bunch of slowing horses. Those two horses were really running hard and digging in and had lots of heart, and we got by them, and kudos for Rich Strike.
Rick Lawson is with us to talk about
Are you saying Dawson or Lawson?
Lawson.
It's Dawson, babe.
Rick, your interest in the game. How you came to the game and your ownership's interest as well.
Okay. I'm actually kind of semi-retired. I was in the oil and gas business for 40-plus years here in Oklahoma. This is where I've grown up and made my home for all these years. And the owner of the golf club that I'm a member is Everett Dobson. He owns Cheyenne Stables.
Sure, of course.
Candy Meadows, all that. So actually on the practice tee, getting ready to play golf, Everett was up hitting balls. Everett's a great guy. He's a Western Oklahoma guy. Lives here in Oklahoma City. And then I just started talking to him. I said, you know, Everett, my life is slowing down a little bit, and I've always loved horses. I've been going to the track for 40 years and always, you know, betting horses and handicapping them, and I love the strategy of racing. And I said, I kind of think I'd like to venture in and maybe some, you know, minority ownership positions, et cetera. And so the first thing he did was say, you don't want to do that, I promise, you know. And he laughed, and we had breakfast, and then he says, hey, why don't you come out to to Lexington, and we'll go to the sale. I can't remember. I think it's Fasig Tipton sale that time, was the Kingland sale. But anyway, he was gracious enough to just let me shadow him one day. And, of course, he had a hot list of horses that people had sent him, you know, near 1,500 horses in the sale down to 20. And so we're standing beside him, and he's going from barn to barn, and he's looking at the horses. And I asked him politely, and I said, Everett, can you just think out loud? Talk about what you're thinking so I can hear you, and that way I can look. And so he starts more or less commenting on each horse that we were looking at, and I learned. And of course, I was supposed to spend that 3 or 4 days to observe. And by the time I left that Saturday, I owned small shares in 5 horses. So I told him, I said, I'm too old to wait too long, buddy. I said, I got to jump in. So anyway, I did. And those didn't really work out much, but it was a great learn. It didn't work. I mean, I don't own any of those now, but a variety of different things went on. But it was a great learning experience. Maybe kind of one of those learning experiences of what not to do, you know, versus what to do. And so it kind of got disenchanted with the business, and I kind of thought about getting out. And a friend of mine in Kentucky, I met out there in 1990 when I was working an oil and gas project in Kentucky, and Pete Shiro is his name. And Pete says, hey, before you get out, let me introduce you to Eric. He said, both of you guys are my close friends, and think a lot of both of you, and I really think that maybe it might be a good partnership. And I said, sure, I'll meet with him. So I met with Eric, and we talked about things. I went out to his farm, and, you know, it's a small farm. He's got his own training track. He's got a lot of things going for him there at Mercury Equine. And the horses don't travel up and down the road to go to Kingland or go to somewhere else to just have a, you know, a gallop or a workout. They come from the barn to the track. And so we talked, and I moved a couple of horses to him, and then we've acquired a few. And of course, Red Strike was one that I acquired that Eric took over last fall, and we won the Derby. So it's been a Cinderella story for sure.
to say the least. And you know, that's part of the appeal, obviously. You know, the fact that, you know, there's so many ways, Rick, to get involved in the game. And, you know, there's people that spend millions, obviously, tens of millions, and don't get close. I mean, so to have this, you know, to have this happen the way it's happened is just so magical. I don't know what other word to use.
Yeah, I agree, and I've said this a number of times this weekend after the race that, you know, Rich Strike, he's no longer owned by Rick Dawson. He's owned by America, and I truly believe that. I've had so many people reach out to me that I don't even know and have never met, that, you know, thank you. This is what America needed. This is what my family needed. We all watched the race. We were all in tears. You know, the little guy, the horse that nobody knew, had the biggest day in racing history, in my opinion. He was just phenomenal, not only winning the race, but how it happened with Sonny and the traffic and the, like you said, the overhead shot of that. People, please go out and or go and download it, whatever you have to do, but you've got to watch the overhead view. It is amazing.
That drone shot, or, you know, at one time it started as the blimp shot, it just, not only does it show what transpired here, but on a regular basis, it's very instructive of how, you know, of how races unfold and the way in which riders are confronted with decisions, as you mentioned, about, you know, do I go inside? And as it happens, I mean, the other closers, the ones that went wide, it lost enough ground, enough significant ground to, you know, to basically be the difference here. You can even tell from the calls, because Simplification and Mo Donegal, they're coming, but they had fanned wide. And so Sonny's decision to stay, you know, in the 2-3 path and to give himself options, and then, you know, and then the way every decision was the right one. And there's been, obviously, Rick, between your decisions and Eric's decisions and Sonny's decisions, everything has just been incredible. You now have a very quick turnaround. You're home in Oklahoma, but you got to turn right around and come into Baltimore. Some thoughts about what lies ahead.
Well, I spoke with Eric this morning. We got Rich Strike back to the farm on Sunday morning, and he's just been hanging out in the stall, doing great. So this morning we got him back on the track there at Mercury Equine, and just did a little exercise, very light gallop. He was feisty as always. He was in great spirits. We've had the vet check him out two or three different times since Saturday's race, and he is he's perfect. He came out of the race perfect. So Eric and I, our plan is to huddle up here on probably Thursday, maybe Friday, and make some final decisions about where we go next. As you guys are aware, when you look at our past history, we've been on a kind of a 5-week cycle between races, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less, but so we got to look at it really closely. I mean, this is, you know, it's a pretty quick turnaround. I mean, obviously the Preakness is a fantastic race. Baltimore's a great place. You know, if the stars align just right, that's absolutely a place to be. But you know, that final decision we'll make here in a day or so.
Well, Steve Asmussen had a very similar mindset when we talked to him last hour. Rick, I mean, do you feel that there's a real chance that you'll bypass?
I don't know about that. I don't think we've really looked at it that way. I think our comments have always been, if you know, Richie's going to tell us what he wants. We call him Richie, by the way. Sonny nicknamed him Richie. It's R-I-T-C-H-I-E, or Richie. And when you say that in his Venezuelan accent, it even sounds even cooler, but it's Richie. And so Eric and I have talked, and from day one with this horse, it's been, you know, what's he telling us? We actually, we drew the two-hole in the Jockey Gold Cup back in the day after Thanksgiving at Churchill. And we drew the two-hole, and Eric and I talked, and we scratched out. We were like, no, we don't, he's not ready for that. He doesn't have the experience. And then we set him up for a race at Remington Park in the Springboard here in Oklahoma. And he got a little cough about a week before the race, and we thought, no way, we're not going to travel him 12 hours in a trailer with him not feeling 100%. So we scratched out that race. And then we went to the Gun Runner, and we got beat handily by Epicenter down in the fairgrounds. He was acting up. We couldn't get him saddled. He's rearing up in the paddock. He was a mess. He was a kid. And to see him come from that over January, February, March, April, and May, the first Saturday, May, I don't know if you saw him, but in the paddockers, you know, there's 150,000 people there. And all week when we were doing our paddock schooling on live race days, there's 25 to 40,000 people there. There's music playing. It is, it's like a rock concert. And he was just cool, calm, and collected. He's like, what's going on around here? What's all the commotion? And so he has matured in such a way that added to our sense of confidence in what he might do come Saturday. And boy, he did it. He did it in a big way. But honestly, we're just going to let Rich Strike tell us what he thinks best. So right now, that decision about the Preakness, it'll be made later in the week. We're not going to drag people out. We're not trying to do that, but we are going to try to make the best decision possible. So, like I said, he just had his first, jog today. We'll see how he does tomorrow morning, and then later in the week we'll make a final decision.
Fair enough. I would be remiss before letting you go, because I know you got another visit coming up. Rick, how did you bet?
I can't even, I don't know if I got any bets for me or not, because I had people calling me and say, hey, make this bet for me. So I'm going to have to go through and try to figure out if I actually got a bet in for me.
I love it.
So I'm not real sure, to be honest with you. My everybody that I know claim they asked me to make a bet for them are really happy. So we'll see if there's anything left after I pay everybody else off.
I love it. And also, this came up with Eric yesterday, and knowing that there's been calls, is there anything to report on that front? And how are you going to handle, a syndication deal?
Yeah, we're, and you're right. Yeah, Eric and I have spoken about that as recently as this morning. So we're going to gather our group of folks that are close to us that have a lot of experience in this business besides Eric, his father and others. And, we're certainly to look at all this kind of thing and make some decisions later on that too. I'm not trying to put you off, but obviously it's only been a couple of 3 days, but we'll see. I like where I'm at right now on 100% of the horse, but I also know there's bigger and better things for Rich Strike that others could probably provide a much better avenue for. So we'll look at everything and make some decisions, and I can't wait. I think I want his history to be extended, not only just the Derby winner, but we want to see bigger and better things for him, and I think he is the horse to do it, I promise you.
Well, for a guy that came out of the petroleum industry, this is certainly striking it rich.
Yeah, I know when we claimed him, and I saw, and of course my name is Richard Dawson, actually I go by Rick, but when I saw Rich Strike, and I thought, boy, doesn't that ring nicely in my head? I don't know about everybody
right.
else.
it
seems perfect.
Very much so. The story is perfect. Rick, thank you so much for this. We'll see. I'm going to confidently say, look forward to seeing you in Baltimore, and or if it's in New York or wherever it's going to be. I was standing there watching you and Herbie and Eric on the track immediately after the race, and the look that of just pure joy, particularly on your face, and then watching Herbie looking at Eric. I mean, it was just wonderful. And then later, seeing Sonny and his wife and baby. This whole thing is just terrific.
Wasn't it a great story when Sonny, what are you going to do? He says, we're leaving for vacation tomorrow.
Yeah.
Did you love that? It was like, well, I'm glad we won the Derby, but I wasn't really planning on being around here long. I was going to go on vacation. I just love it. I just love the guy. And this is why, this is why when Eric and I spoke of of jocks and stuff like that. And he, you know, of course, he, Eric uses Sonny a lot, and so Sonny started riding my horses, and I told him, I said, I wouldn't change, never. I mean, the guy has got, he's got courage, he's fearless, he loves our horse, he knows our horse. Why change, you know? And in fact, my comment was, I wouldn't change my socks, let alone my jock. So there you go. Yeah, not going to do it. I'm not changing the thing. All right, well, I appreciate letting me on the show, and hopefully folks will, if you've fallen out of love with horse racing, you can fall back in love, I promise you.
I love it. Well said, Rick. Thank you so much. Rick Dawson joining us, and Rich Strike, part two.
All right.
Of the Facebook. Thanks so much, Rick.
Thank you. See you guys.
We're going to take the break here. Rich Migliori is going to stand by, and I can't keep Rich waiting any longer. Eric needed to come on when he did, and same thing with Rick, who's got now he's got a 10:30, and then he's got another thing at 11:15. So I had to grab him when we could. Sure, you know. Can expect that that they'll make the move to Preakness. I mean, everything, at least here, you know, immediately following the race Saturday, it feels like all is okay. But much like Steve Asmussen, they'll take their time, I guess, and. That's interesting to me that I talked about spacing with him. All right, we'll see how this field potentially morphs. There's at least about, call it 9 plus, perhaps maybe a 10th right now that feel committed. Unoho and Fenwick, Morello, Skippy Longstocking, In Due Time. McPeak has got all three, and boy, it seems like Creative Minister is a certainty, and of course, we already know Simplification and Early Voting. I can't believe that Rich Strike wouldn't show up in Baltimore. Then if you get Epicenter too, then it's a really nice mix. How does that sound? Rich Strike, Early Voting, Simplification, Epicenter. Those four, plus another seven, and who knows what else. There's actually an interesting kind of a turfy horse, Shake 'Em Loose, that apparently is a possibility. Was added to the possible list. And then the Secret Oath. We haven't even mentioned Secret Oath. Rich Migliori joins us next, second half at the races.
Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, and Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Bosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
Horsefin, nominate now for the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Elks. Both races will be run Friday, June 3rd, each at 1 mile on the grass at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. Nominations close Wednesday, May 18th. Contact the Penn National Racing Office at 1-800-233-8238. That's 1-800-233-8238. Or go to hollywoodpnrc.com/racing.
Want to get to your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you?